Welcome to the Minivade Gang podcast for Saturday, August 8th, 2009. This is Steve Borsch, and I've got Phil Wilson.
This is the Prairie Home Companion version of
it is. The Minivade podcast. Graham Thickens.
Ah, yes, another virtual podcast recording session. Hopefully I'll get a word in edgewise on this one.
Ooh. Yeah, right. And Tim Elliott.
Howdy.
And we're getting cranked up here. It is really a bleak morning, but I guess it's going to get better, right?
It's a bleak morning. Oh, my God.
We're all going to die.
After a dark and stormy night.
I know. Yeah. I'm in a foul mood.
Why? Uh-oh. Why are you
Twitter.
In a
foul mood? Twitter's got me in a foul mood. It's still not working for me.
You can only get Tweety to work for you, can't you?
Yeah, those damn Russians, I'll tell you.
Oh, man. Well, it's we should have kept the Cold War
it's
going.
The Ruskies.
Well, you know, it's funny. I mean, you can really see why the Pentagon is so pro cybersecurity.
Yeah.
I mean, because it's denial of service is not that hard to do. And imagine it goes after mission critical systems. But boy, to see the Star Tribune this morning, below the fold was the reprint of the New York Times article. You won't believe why Twitter quit.
Yeah, I saw that.
Man. So that was.
You're still reading a newspaper?
Oh, yeah.
I am. It's, I tell you what, it's a bitch to search, though.
You just like scribble something in the top corner and it never goes anywhere?
Yeah, that's right. I keep pushing on it and nothing happens. Yeah. Well, it was amazing because I actually had people call me, like this guy, Phil Wilson. Yeah. And I got emails from people saying, hey, what's going on with Twitter? Do you know what's going on with Twitter?
It's the only way to reach out.
Oh, it was amazing.
Yeah, I saw that one from Randy. That's how I first found out about it. I was up to my eyeballs trying to post that fan chatter story, and I didn't even know Twitter was down. And But the site was so slow because, you know, our WordPress page was trying to connect to Twitter or something. And I finally clicked over to my Gmail, and here's this email between you and Randy wondering, you know, what the hell, why is Twitter down? And that was my first hint.
Yeah.
But it sure caused me grief.
I went right to Friend Feed, and there was a whole discussion about Twitter being down on Friend Feed.
I'd forgotten all about Friend Feed.
Thank God for Friend Feed. That's I finally started using it. I really haven't used it much, but then I thought, oh, I can tweet here and it will go to Twitter. Well, it wasn't.
Eventually.
Well, no, yeah. I don't think anything I was posting there was going to Twitter, even though I was telling it to. I don't think it still wasn't this morning.
Oh, really?
So I saw Scobel talking yesterday on Friend Feed that he was having lunch with somebody and they said the Twitter API was still down. And that was, you know, like yesterday afternoon.
So that's why TweetDeck on the iPhone wasn't functioning because it was showing me old posts for a while.
Yeah.
Okay.
Seems to be working this morning though. I use Tweety on the Mac and it seems to be.
Oh, Tweety. Tweety's working great on my iPhone, but that's the only app that I can get to work. I can't get anything else to work, and TweetGrid is totally screwed. I can't get that to come up at all. So well, I'm feeling very, you know, sort of out of it. So that's the bleak morning for me along with the weather.
Well, I was watching a rerun of Dragnet last night, and Joe Friday
it's the only kind you can see there.
And there was a guy waving his hand in the air, Twitter, Twitter, because he was high on some kind of drug.
Yeah. Was that the Blue Boy episode?
It actually was the Blue Boy episode.
Okay, well there you go.
Just hilarious, but
and he was saying Twitter, Twitter.
No, he wasn't. I'm kidding.
Oh, okay.
But it was because you were the one, Phil, that brought up the thing about withdrawal symptoms almost. And it was funny because I realized that even though I'm not paying anywhere near the attention to Twitter that a lot of people are, I'm still, you know, I got my iPhone and I'm at a stoplight and I pull up TweetDeck and I look and just see what's going on. And I kept doing that and it wasn't working. And I realized that I was already in the habit of checking.
Yep.
So, oh, yeah. That's addict-like behavior.
We right? all do, yeah. Well, like I said this morning, I got one tweet to go through on Tweety. Well, they're all going through on Tweety. I said, thank God for Tweety. It's the only money I've ever spent on Twitter, you know, but it's the best $2.99 I ever spent. You get what you pay for, I guess. Oh, the free app sure aren't working.
It was fun. It was fun, though. You know, I just decided when I wrote that post for RemainCom, I just decided during the Twitter blackout just to call people and say, what are you doing? And it was kind of fun to get the different reactions. And Graham and I spoke. Gosh, you and I talked for a good 20 minutes, didn't we, Graham?
Yeah. It's the first time we've talked live on a phone call. And I can't
remember. Yeah, no, it was great. It was like, wow. We went way beyond 140 characters. So
this is kind of like the blackout in New York back in, what, the 70s, 60s or 70s? And then 9 months later, all kinds of babies were born. So
right. The Twitter blackout. I wonder how many babies will be born because of the Twitter blackout. I don't know.
Boy, that's just an image I don't need. All right.
By the way, I did want to mention that the guy that was caught wearing a women's thong in the apartment, it was on WCCO.com, was not me. The guy's picture was actually there. So
I missed that one. Yeah, where did this happen?
I'll put it in the show notes. I just wanted to mention that wasn't me.
Well, you know, if you can't get through a Minivade Gang podcast without using the word thong at some point, you've got to, you know, really.
Yeah.
So congratulations on that, Steve.
Thanks, buddy. Hey, let's talk about fan chatter. That was a great, that was an excellent post, Graham.
What a story. I've been sitting on that for a long time because, I first got wind of it through some of my developer buddies who had picked up on Luke or somebody, Luke or Norm, blogging or tweeting on their trip out to the Valley. You know, they drove out there first for their interview.
Right.
They flew out there for the interview, but then, I don't know, I guess I thought they drove out when they moved out there for the summer. I think they drove. So somebody was picking up on, some of my buddies were picking up on these stray tweets or posts and saying, well, what's going on? Why are these guys going to the Valley? And I when I first heard this, I thought, what? They're moving to the Valley to get money? What? Why would they do this? And I knew Marty had a full-time job, Marty Weatherall, the other co-founder, and who's a fine television commercial producer at Fallon and kind of their resident social media guru. But I drilled into it a little bit and I learned about the Y Combinator thing. And so I immediately emailed Marty and I said, I hear you have a little news for me, Marty. And he comes back at me, oh God, don't blog about it. Please, please don't blog about it. And I go, oh, okay, fine. He said, we have to wait for TechCrunch to do the first official blog post.
Yeah.
That's part of the deal with Y Combinator, that all these startups that get selected do get a blog post from TechCrunch, and that will be the first sort of public news of what's happening. And if anybody else posts before then they won't get their TechCrunch story. So he was pleading with me. I said, no problem. So anyway, they shot me an email or something. I forget when it was. It was last Saturday. I'm in Chicago for a wedding, and I'm checking my email or my DMs on Tweety, and they're saying, you know, thanks, Graham, for sitting on the story so long. It's now out there. And it was Saturday, August 1st, I guess, when the TechCrunch story broke. So all of a sudden it was like, do your story.
That's
so
great.
Anyway, it's really neat that a Minneapolis startup that was just a sideline project for these guys has enough traction to get the attention of some pretty serious investors and early stage advisors, this group of four partners with Y Combinator, which, as the story said, raised $2 million recently to fund even more startups. They got some Sequoia money, And one of 30 startups selected out of something close to 1,000 that applied.
Well, and you know, I will tell you that I am so happy for Fan Chatter for a reason that no one else may even consider. I absolutely hate it when I'm watching a game or watching, a golf tournament, and people are giving blow by blow. Oh, what a great shot, you know, and so on. And no, I'm not teasing you, Tim. I'm thinking more about Paul DeBettings because the guy is like just thousands of tweets. And I think how great would it be to have a place where you could go in, log on, and be connected, and people, you know that everybody in there is watching the same thing.
The exciting thing to me about Fan Chatter is where it's going to go from sports. You know, they're already talking about concerts potentially, and who knows beyond that. But the word fan sort of suggests a lot of different things that could happen for those guys.
Makes perfect sense. Yeah.
And, it's just the beginning. And I guess, as I was telling Phil in our little phone conversation when Twitter went down, is I think these guys are probably going to get some funding from at least some angels in the Valley. And I think it'd be crazy if some of our local angels don't invest in this too, because I think it's got a lot of great potential. And I'm thinking those guys are gonna take off. You know, I'm super supporter of what they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
So it could be the first big time breakout startup we've seen in Minnesota.
Yeah, it has the potential for that. I really think. You know,
Or are they going to be based out in on the West Coast?
Oh no, they don't have to be based out there. Some of the funding sources out there could tell them that, and I'm sure they'll hear that if they haven't already, that yeah, we'd be happy to fund you, but we want you here, you know. But I don't think those guys would do it, you know. I really don't. I mean, you know, Marty has a family and Luke's married, and I think Norm is too, and I would be surprised if they just said, oh, okay, we're gonna uproot everything and move out there. You know, they're enjoying their 3 months, but like many Minnesota startups that get offers of money to move out there, I think they'd say no. Now, I haven't discussed this with them at all, but, and you never know when people start dangling big money, you know, but I've seen it happen before where people have turned down that opportunity. The developers here like it here.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
many
yeah.
of them have lived and worked out there, and they've done that, you know, been there, done that, didn't like it, you know. And Robert Metcalf was a classic example of that with FlySpy. He had the chance to take money out there and didn't do it. Ended up getting funded here, you know.
Look at Doug Olson. Doug Olson was out in living in Fremont, California, mm-hmm. when he was at Adobe. And one day his wife came to him and said, Doug, I love you and the kids love you, but we're going back to Minnesota. And he says to his boss, what's going on? I got to resign. And his boss, no, go back there, get an ISDN line and connect up. And one thing led to another, and he ended up building that Adobe office on 694. He ended up with 60 people there at one point, one of the top engineering offices at Adobe. And of course, now he's repeated that with Microsoft doing the same sort of thing. But it is getting easier, especially as the talent base grows here in Minnesota, to be here.
Yes, and there are some startups. Well, Headmix is one. Ben Moore's the CTO. His co-founder is in San Francisco. But Ben, you know, I'm sure he spends a lot of time out there. I haven't talked to him lately, but I don't think he had any intention whatsoever of relocating himself mm-hmm. to San Francisco. Apparently it's working just fine for them, where one is here and one is out there, and they probably have other employees now too. I don't know where they might be, but increasingly these startups are virtual with people sprinkled all over, you know?
Yep, absolutely. Well, speaking of startups, I wanted to mention that one of our sponsors on the front page of Innovate, Business Card 2, Leif Larson, they just launched a new beta of Business Card 2, and people can go and look at that on the Minnovate site in the right-hand sidebar. But this whole space is heating up relative to being able to have, you know, a virtual 40,000 foot view of yourself, where you can quickly get into your card, you can download a V-card, you can get your bio, and then you can have something that's embeddable and portable and that you can move from place to place. And not just that, but then obviously you have extensions with directory services and things like that. And what are you guys doing? Because Tim, I see you doing a lot of it with respect to in the sidebar on timelliott.us, you connect up with all your social networks and all the places that you're participating. I think we all are. I think we're all doing that. But are you guys finding anything that's meeting your needs better?
I've been using Retagger for a long time. I mean, they were, I think, the first aggregator of all the social networks. Mm-hmm. And so that's the little widget that I've got on my blog is from Retagger, which is R-E-T-A-G-G-R. Of course, it has to omit the vowel.
Yeah.
I just saw another one yesterday or the day before via Mashable, and I can't remember what the name of it is. I basically just built my own on the sidebar. So, but I can't remember who does it, but it was very much like Retagger, but seemed to have a little bit more, I don't know, a Mac look to it.
Yeah. Well, and then there's Joseph Reuter's site.
Extender.
Thank you.
Extender. I use Extender as well, but not on my website right now.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's just interesting to see all these different approaches and, you know, I'm sort of participating in all of them, and not really certain which one is going to win out, but,
interesting. Same for me. I've got so much in my sidebar. I can't keep track of it. I'm always having to turn stuff off and, and try new stuff. But I'm thinking of putting Business Card 2 on there.
Yeah, I think
giving it a try. I should have long before now, but now that I'm aware of the latest upgrade, I think it's a good time for me to give it a shot.
Great.
One thing I just put on, this is a different subject, but did you guys get the new Echo comment widget thing yet from JS Kit?
No, what's that?
I slammed that up on my blog a couple days ago. I haven't gotten any comments on it yet, but it just became available out of beta, I guess. And it's another way to do comments on a blog. And the promise is, I was reading a tweet from Jeremiah Aoyang that the promise is that it will collect all the comments on a blog post in one place, even tweets about a blog post. So anyway, I put it up there. It's pretty simple code to just plop in there, and it allows people to. It just says what's on your mind, and people can start commenting right there in the sidebar. And
yeah, send me the link to that. I'd be interested in there's a plugin. Sure. There's a plugin for WordPress that I'm using that does that same sort of thing, where it aggregates the blog comments, or excuse me, the tweets and everything else.
It's not Backtype, is it?
It is.
Oh yeah, yeah. I participate in that too. I don't have it on my blog, but I'm always getting notified. I'm signed up on it, and so I get notified when there are comments to my comments or something.
Yeah.
Yep. Get an email. Yeah, but I'll send you. Yeah, I'll find this JS Kit thing.
Yep. So let's do a segue into one of the biggest buzz things out there, and it's what's going on with Apple turning down iPhone apps. And Tim, you've played with the G1.
Uh huh. Yeah, son has one.
Your son has one. Okay. Yep. And I spent about a half hour with a Palm Pre.
Was it good for you?
Which is, yeah. I had a cigarette afterwards, but
didn't you find the bottom edge of that thing incredibly sharp?
Not only that, but I just found it very difficult to use for
me. It's a clumsy little machine. I had a chance to spend some time with it too, and it's not fun.
Yeah,
I think it's too small. Actually,
I do too.
I agree.
Yeah, it is, unfortunately.
I mean, it could be just a touch larger, and it would be more substantial. I don't mean it needs to be as big as an iPhone, which I think is almost too big. But it just seems to me, it just seems too small, and that keyboard is just. I imagine you'd get used to it, but it just seems way too cramped for me.
Well, I was kind of wondering why everybody was complaining about the keyboard until I got my hands on one. Well, they're just too damn flat. You know, they're not. I mean, why can't we go back to the 650 keyboard?
I think the 650 keyboard is the best thumb board ever made.
I mean, I would agree.
Ever made. It's really perfect. It's too bad the hardware is what, 5-6 years old. But if they could just bring that form factor back with the webOS, I think they'd have a hit.
I think a friend of mine, Tom Webster at Edison Research, was really hot on a Sony phone. I can't remember which one it was, but he said it was the best keyboard he'd ever used. And I can't remember. A Z something, I don't know. Do you guys know anything about that?
No. Yeah, no. Unless it was the Sharp, but you said it was a Sony.
Yeah. But anyway, it was interesting to see the Palm Pre up close, but that edge, just like, wow. It really never dawned on me, because there's videos out there now showing the Palm Pre cutting cheese with the edge of the phone.
Oh, it's like, God.
Oh my God, I had no idea it was that sharp.
So just to get everybody up to speed on, for those listeners that aren't familiar with the controversy over the Apple and iPhone apps, it's all about Apple turning down apps that people don't know why they're turning them down, or they're turning them down for very bizarre reasons, or not giving any reasons, or this incredibly prolific developer, I think out of somewhere in Asia Pacific, who had done 900 and some apps, and been submitting them every day, and making, you know, a couple grand a day off of sales of all these apps, and they pulled all of them out. So, you know, there's all this stuff going on, but most specifically, the highest profile one is them pulling Google Voice out and the other voice related apps. And man, I listened to This Week in Tech, Leo Laporte's show, and Jason Calacanis was on there, and Peter Rojas from GadgetGT.com, and they were talking about it, and they all had their opinions and so on. And I tried to step back and think about this for a little while. Why in the world would they do this? Can I just go just talk about this for a second? I mean, not to pontificate, but
Well, you are anyways.
I am anyway.
Steve, it's never stopped you before. I mean,
okay, really quick. So I'm going to draw an analogy between this and what is happening with the HTML5 specification. And you may say, huh? But the HTML5 spec included open source video codecs, and Apple and some others said no to them. And so they pulled them out. And ostensibly it was because H.264 was so great and you know, everybody's got to pay a license to use it. But and then Google goes off and buys On2 on Thursday, and a company that has supposedly much better codec than H.264. And now all I'm reading is many people are saying that Google is going to throw that into open source, and that'll be the codec that everybody uses in HTML5, and it'll basically pull the rug out from underneath Adobe and Silverlight and so forth. And so then I started to think, okay, well, what does it have to do with the iPhone apps and especially Google Voice and so on? And Skype did this petition in front of the FCC to open up wireless access to the carriers. And then there's this other one that's up in front of the FCC about handset exclusivity. And all of a sudden I realized, oh my God, in the same way that Apple said no to the open source video codec because they knew Google was going to buy On2 and throw it into open source, is the same thing that might be going on here with Google Voice and the other apps, in terms of there's a much bigger strategic move in play, namely blowing open the wireless space. And so, do you think I'm smoking dope?
No, I think that it's an anti-competitive sort of action that Apple has made, probably in some sort of cahoots with AT&T.
Do you?
Yeah, it's obvious. I mean, Google Voice is not a, it's not a as competitive as a service to AT&T as Skype is, which is still in the App Store last time I checked.
Well, it is available over Wi-Fi, but imagine with me, if you will, that Google
the way that Google Voice works, though, is it uses your current cell service. So it's not like it's a voice over IP or anything like that. It actually calls you back. So you're using your AT&T minutes when you use it.
Well, that's true, but here's the thing, and I've talked to maybe five other people about this, about what's holding you back from using Google Voice, and everybody, including me, says number portability. And the moment number portability is available, I'm dropping Vonage like a hot potato.
And okay, so you want your current number?
I want my current number, and so. Uh-huh. I've been wondering, why is Google holding off on offering number portability? So something's going on there. And what I realize is that if Google Voice had gone out with number portability and everything, the amount of landline dropping that would occur, or putting Vonage out of business and so on and so forth, would have been so dramatic that it could have changed the course of how the FCC would have moved toward opening up the wireless space.
Yeah, that's true, because I would drop my home phone service if I could put it into a Google Voice account.
Yeah, in a heartbeat. Yeah.
I dropped my home phone service with Quest, dropped two landlines, and went with T-Mobile at home, VoIP. And they have number portability. They were able to keep my same home lines for me, and I can change that later if I want to, which I might want to do.
Yeah, no, I have that service too. It's like $10 a month extra on your bill, so it's a good deal. And what's really cool is that each of those phone numbers has a SIM card. So if you wanted to, you could actually take it with you and put it into a cell phone.
Yes. Don't get me going about SIM cards, because they sent me a bad one, and I went through hell trying to figure out what was wrong with that line, and went through an hour on the phone with the support guy, and he never told me, why don't you try putting the SIM card in your cell phone? My wife has a T-Mobile cell phone, and see if that were. He didn't tell me that. I had a bad SIM card, and it took me hours to finally figure it out. It was just a simple thing like that. But anyway, I love the service now that it's working.
Well, so Tim, you had said something about the MiFi, and how the article about the MiFi plus the iPod Touch almost equals the iPhone. And
in if you're in Europe.
Okay. Yeah. If you're in Europe,
but that's another story.
Well, but with respect to what's going on with Comcast making the announcement that they're getting into the wireless space in a big way, again, just extending this whole Google Voice, Apple iPhone thing into this larger, much bigger strategic thing. Wouldn't it make sense that devices like a MiFi would come, and people could potentially dramatically reduce the number of mobile minutes they would need from an AT&T or a Verizon?
Yeah, I think that what's going to need to happen is someone that doesn't have, that's not one of the four major carriers, mobile carriers in the U.S., has got to come up with a service that just has a much higher cap than the two that currently are selling MiFi, which are Verizon and Sprint. And basically the idea of a MiFi is it's a personal Wi-Fi hotspot. You can connect up to five devices to it. And it operates over the 3G data network. And for $60 a month, you get 5 gigs worth of bandwidth. So what this Wired reporter was doing is, he lives in Spain, so he was using a Spanish carrier that has a much higher cap, and using his iPod Touch. And then as he goes around, he's got this MiFi in his pocket, basically. And so he's got his own personal Wi-Fi, and using Google Voice as his... and Skype as his way to send and receive calls. So I thought that was a very interesting approach to kind of root around all the carriers. And if someone that wasn't one of the four kind of came out with a data plan that was, say, 25 or 50 gigs or something that would be reasonable so you could use voice apps and streaming apps on a regular basis, I think that would really change the game, and that people might either drop down to a minimal cell plan just to have for convenience and do all their data over something like a MiFi, because, of course, you could connect your laptop to it and consolidate. Like, Graham, I know you have is it Sprint or Verizon card?
I have the AT&T broadband card, the Sierra Wireless.
Oh, okay. So it would basically replace that as well. So it'd give you the same kind of service you're getting from that, but mm-hmm. But from this basically access point that you can connect whatever Wi-Fi device to. So it was an interesting approach, and I know that if it was more than 5 gigs for $60 a month, I would definitely change my plans and consider using something like a Touch to do phone work, as well as all the other apps and things, and not necessarily get an iPhone.
Well, what's interesting is my daughter works at the Apple Store at Mall of America, and there's a guy there who shall remain nameless because he's in the Apple Store all the time, of course, and with their Wi-Fi. And he has his iPod Touch, and he has Skype launched, just keeps it in his pocket.
Is his name Steve Borsch?
I don't work there. No, yeah, right.
I'm hanging around there all the time.
Steve has an iPhone, so he doesn't need to be the creepy guy with his iPod Touch.
That's right. I'm not creepy at all.
but if you had the ability to have a personal Wi-Fi hotspot that this followed you around in your pocket, that would kind of change my view of the way that a Touch as a device would be. It's more than just a gaming and iPod. It also simulates more of the iPhone features.
It does.
Yep. So I'm hoping that someone comes out with a competitive service. I know that everyone's going to probably have these MiFi devices in the next 6 months or so, and they'll all be discounted down to $99, and then probably by this time next year they'll be $49 if you sign up for a 2-year contract. And so they'll be cheap enough that everyone can have one, and then that would mean that you can just carry around your Wi-Fi with you. It'd be very convenient, that's for sure.
Yeah. I'll say. Well, the biggest thing that I'm starting to realize, because I'm trying to help my wife figure out how she can use her iPhone to, do very brief audio chat or audio submissions that would go into her blog, how she could do, and we're thinking about putting it together, a post or us. And the challenge for her is, it wouldn't be for any of us, but the challenge for her is figuring out how to use Wi-Fi Faux Fum, which is an app for the iPhone that you can see whatever hotspots, and then you can choose a public one and join it, so that she's able to upload stuff, because the cost for her to get a data plan while she's traveling in Europe, I mean, she'd have to turn it on, turn it off, turn it on, turn it off, because I think it's, like $60 for a data plan, and you got caps on it, and then there's Wi-Fi problems. They do an upcharge. Even T-Mobile does an upcharge on Wi-Fi. So it's really hard. It's great in the U.S., but it's really hard if you travel internationally to have this sort of seamless experience where you can actually count on being able to heavily participate on the net with content via a mobile device. And I think that MiFi thing, that would be awesome, because it would work. It would work great.
Yeah, but the problem with it right now is it's tied to a specific network provider. So, if she traveled in Europe a lot, I imagine you could buy one over there, because this Wired reporter in Spain has one, and then use it only for Europe, and then have one over here too for when you're. In the U.S.
Got it.
But I don't believe there's one that has a reasonable plan that you could, roam globally and not be, paying through the nose when you're, outside of your home area.
Right. Well, it's getting easier to have ubiquitous access, but it's still not inexpensive and it's not easy, well, all the way around.
Yeah, no, I think that the, you know, most people that are technologically sophisticated know that you can buy pay-as-you-go SIMs in just about every country outside the U.S. They're GSM SIMs.
Yep.
That'll go into your unlocked GSM phone. So as long as you have an carrier unlocked phone of some sort, you can buy these for 20, 30 euros when you're in Europe and at least have a voice and an SMS service that's a reasonable cost, you know.
Well, you know what, though? I got a buddy who's in several Scandinavian countries and also in Poland, maybe a week or so out of every month. And he calls me all the time. He goes, "Hey, how you doing?" I go, "Good." And I said, "Are you on Skype?" "Yep." And so he's just using the Skype app. And he shows up to, he'll just go around and hunt for a open public Wi-Fi hotspot, go in and buy a cup of coffee, sit down and make phone calls. And it works perfectly. So on an iPod Touch in that case.
Yeah, or an iPhone, yeah.
Yeah. So that works real well. So coming up, I'm just wondering how the logistics are going to go on this, but coming up at the State Fair on August 31st is a social media breakfast.
I thought it was the 28th.
28th.
Thank you. Like, yeah. I said, August 28th.
It really has to happen during the fair.
It does. That's right.
It'd be cheaper.
It wouldn't be nearly as fun if we were there and there was no fair.
It'll be 11 bucks cheaper on the 21st.
That's right.
All right. Sorry. You guys are all going, right?
Oh, yeah. Yep. Oh, yeah. I actually got registered this time.
Yeah, they took the cap off the tickets, so it was easier to do.
Yeah.
Well, so, Phil, I'll drive this time.
You drive this time because that way I can avoid the parking ticket.
Yeah. Well, you avoided the parking ticket anyway, but...
Shh. Quiet.
And then we got to pay 11 bucks each to get into the fairgrounds, so...
Right. Well, then we're all going to go over to the Home Ec building and see the butter sculpture of Prince K of the Milky Way, and that's Phil. Oh.
Wouldn't miss it.
He won this year.
Is Phil modeling for that?
Yeah, he won this year. So,
yeah, right. And Prince K.
Prince K.
In a tutu.
In a tutu. Great.
Yeah.
My wife, actually, this is a little side story. My wife, when we first met, was working for the Midland UDIA, which is a organization for milk producers or dairy producers in Iowa. And she was responsible for overseeing the butter sculpture and the butter sculptor at the Iowa State Fair. So, did you know they use that butter over and over again?
Do they seriously?
Yes.
Oh, geez.
Yum.
Yeah. It's got to be stinky. Oh, my gosh.
So, but I know it'll be a lot of fun and I'm looking forward to it. What else is happening? We've got Blogwell next week, right?
Yeah. That's right. August 13th. That'll
be fabulous.
Mm-hmm. That's got to be a sellout from everything I heard.
Well, anytime we get a chance to go to General Mills, it's okay by me. It's great.
In fact, Andy Cernovitz told me it'll be the largest one they've had. And he's been doing these all around the country, you know. So that's pretty cool.
Really?
That's because they heard Graham was going.
Yeah. Well, you know, he was nice enough to extend us Minovate guys a press pass, so I guess we'll all be there, right?
Absolutely. No, yeah, I think it's going to be outstanding.
And I think, I don't know what room they're doing it in, whether it'll be that same room where we heard Jeremiah Aoyang from Forrester speak when we were there.
It'll be a much bigger room than that. Yeah.
You think so? Yeah, because that would only hold like 75 or so, I think. But maybe they got it in a bigger room then. You think it's going to be hundreds of people?
Oh, yeah, I think so.
Oh, good. Good. Well, I succeeded in getting a deluxe partner up to go to it. So that'll be fun to see them there.
Fabulous. Well, and also you'll notice if you go to gaspedal.com/blogwell, and I'll put that in the show notes, we're one of the partners.
Yeah. So,
MEMA and AMA and Social Media Breakfast and Minovate.
Yep.
So really looking forward to it. It's going to be, I think it'll be really enlightening to actually hear from people at these larger organizations that are actually responsible for for jumping in and figuring out how do they best, you know, be involved with social media. You know, what are the best practices that they've already come up with, and what are they doing for analytics and those sorts of things?
Yeah. And there are some major brands represented. I mean, you know, what, McDonald's, Walmart, Mayo Clinic, who else? Trying to remember now.
Ford.
Ford.
Progressive Insurance, H&R Block. Well, General Mills, of course, McDonald's. So, you know, the only thing I didn't like about McDonald's is they sent me a direct message because I was following them. They said, "Hey, fat boy, we got a new sandwich at the."
And I we know think, you'll love.
I didn't think that was an appropriate use of social media, so I'll have to talk to somebody when I get there.
I don't want to get direct messages from McDonald's.
I'm kidding. Oh, no, I love those. I love those guys.
Come in and have a double third pounder stacked with cheese or whatever, you know.
Oh, well, please. Now they have this Angus burger that they're giving away.
Listen to this, just Steve's up on top of it.
Well, I try to stay away, but they have this Angus burger that's like 9,000 calories. You know.
Well, needless to say, I don't think that McDonald's will be, you know, doing some sort of cholesterol monitoring AP or app for the phone, so the iPhone. So.
Oh man.
Well, when I was in Chicago, there's a restaurant, family-owned restaurant for like 50 years called Hackney's. And Hackney's has a location on Harms, and my wife and I were invited to go there and meet a bunch of new people and stuff. We were living there, and we show up there, and they have something called the Hackney Heart Attack. And it's this huge hamburger with onion rings. You know, it's got like raw onions on it and all that kind of stuff. And they call it that because people, honest to God, the next morning or in the night, think they're having a heart attack.
Oh, jeez.
Oh, man.
Oh, Chicago is quite the eating town. I was there last weekend for a wedding.
Oh, and that's right.
Yeah. It was fun.
Man. But they're also, by the way, Hackney's is on Facebook and Twitter, I just noticed. That I pulled them up. So isn't everyone now?
I guess.
Amazing. Well, guys, I think we should wrap it up. And thank you.
Yeah.
Hope you have a great weekend.
Yeah. And let's hope Twitter gets back healthy and so I can get out of my foul mood.
Yeah. It looks like the website works, Graham. So if you go to twitter.com, it works, but all of their API gateways appear to not work.
Yeah.
Well, wow.
They're still recovering, but.
Although I am getting a feed from Tweety, so that's interesting. But authorization gateways haven't been working for the last couple of days, I've noticed.
Yeah.
You know, like you're connecting a third party application to it and it doesn't work.
Yep.
Well, somebody told me that, or I saw a tweet on this, that there was a conjecture that there were over 700 third-party apps that were tied into the API.
Oh yeah. Oh, I thought I'd heard even more than that. But
yeah, I'd be curious what that number is.
Oh yeah, it's big. Yeah, so there's a lot of the ecosystem is still not working right, but I'm sure they'll figure it out.
Well, I don't know. My TweetDeck seems to be working. It's my tweet is. Or is it just going into nowhere? It must be working.
No, it's working. I just saw your tweet just showed up on friend feed, Phil.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, it's working. Okay. Both on the iPhone as well. So, okay, this has nothing to do with anything, but on the
Mac. Anyway.
I'm going to say it anyway. Just because it's so funny. So I ended up buying a little app called EvoCam, EvoCam for the Mac. And it is this remarkable little security camera. And the reason I did it is because I had kids driving across my lawn a couple of times. So I thought I'd point my EyeSight camera out there. And then I can point it on a specific part of the lawn. And then if anything happens, if there's any movement, it'll start recording. And
I thought you were going to say it would turn the hose on them or something.
Oh, I wish I could do that. But it'll start recording. So I just thought I'd do this for grins. And then I can also get into it from my iPhone. So I did port forwarding in my router. So I can actually watch the camera on my iPhone.
I'll be damned.
I mean, how fun is that? It's just a great little app. Anyway, I know that had nothing to do with anything, but I just it's just one of those little. I'm spinning the propeller on my beanie, and then,
oh, it's so geeky! I love it.
All right, you guys, have a great weekend.
Have a great weekend, too,
guys. Alrighty. Talk to you
Take
soon.
Take care. Bye.
We're out.